beast that made its way through the Oklahoma City suburbs to the south in really the city of Moore is the air the hardest. I want to go back now, if we still have him, Jim Ryan, who's joining me from Oklahoma. Jim, talk to me. You have been in Oklahoma for the last 24 hours or so. You were there because of yesterday's tornado. Where is Moore and this area, this mile-wide tornado, where is this compared to what ripped through the area yesterday?
Well, it's a good ways west of there, maybe 40 miles west of Shawnee, where that tornado hit yesterday. But again, this was a wide area of damage yesterday. I heard it compared to bear claws scratching across the earth there in several locations, doing a whole lot of damage. And these weren't just mobile homes that were being tossed over. These were sturdy brick houses that were being damaged by that storm that came through yesterday, or those, that series of storms, really. It stretched all the way across to the east of Oklahoma City, and then moved up to the northeast from there.
And unfortunately, Jim, as bad as this one yesterday seemed, this one seems like it could be much worse. It's ABC's Jim Ryan, who is in Oklahoma right now. I want to go to ABC's Mike Boettcher. He is live in Moore itself. Mike, tell us what you're seeing right now.
Well, I'm looking about a mile ahead of me, a mile north of me, and I'm seeing a huge plume of smoke. The aftermath of this tornado that passed through. We tracked it all the way through Moore. At one point, as it was ready to cross I-35, Interstate 35, we were 1 mile from it. You could see big chunks of debris being picked up by this tornado as it passed through this heavily populated area. Now, in 1999, I covered the Moore tornado back then. It was a huge disaster. This tornado looks even more powerful to me and took a similar track. We're hearing about theaters that have been destroyed, homes. At one point,
ABC's Mike Boettcher in Moore right now. You're listening to live coverage from ABC News. Okay, I want to go back to Mike Boettcher now. Sorry to cut you off, Mike. Continue on. Tell me what you're seeing.
A huge plume of smoke. I can only assume a fire has been started. These tornadoes rip up natural gas lines and create real problems. We're trying to work our way back into that populated area because Interstate 35 is blocked off. We tracked the tornado through Moore. As I said, at one point we were less than a mile away and managed to get away from this tornado, which to me looked at least a mile wide. The only other time I've seen a tornado that wide was the Moore tornado in 1999. And the Wichita Falls tornado in 1979. This was a monster. And as we sat there and watched it pass us, debris started falling out of the sky, pieces of shingle and wood. We got in our vehicle to try to protect ourselves from that. As it crossed Interstate 35, there were people standing on the overpass watching the tornado, not taking cover. We left. They were still standing there. And I do not believe they survived.
Oh, boy. Mike Boettcher in Moore, Oklahoma right now. And we've been hearing from a number of different people who have said that they saw people not taking cover for whatever reason. Either they were in awe of what they were looking at or they didn't realize how bad it was. But we do know now it is quite bad. A mile-wide tornado striking south of Oklahoma City. These are areas that now we are, as you just heard Mike describe, hearing about fires that are burning, entire neighborhoods that are gone. Mike, describe what the skies look like right now. Do you worry about more tornadoes coming through, or does it look like that threat has passed?
Well, I'm traveling with our partners from KTUL Television in Tulsa, Joe Day and John Haverfield, who incidentally is one of my former students. He's a meteorologist, and he...
This is KSL AM, Salt Lake City, KSL FM Midvale. You've been listening to live coverage from ABC News, a tornado that has hit near Oklahoma City. We've also promised you a press conference from West Valley Police Department on the search for Susan Powell. We will come back to our ABC coverage as soon as this press conference is over.
We will not be actively and further pursuing this investigation. Second point following that is this. As we have no further leads to discuss or disseminate, we are at this time going to release all the investigation materials that West Valley City owns that are associated with the case. That information is voluminous, has been reviewed, has been being prepared for the last while for that release, and will be available to you upon the end of this press conference. comments I'd like to make are this. First, I'd like to thank all the associated agencies, federal, state, local, private, across many state boundaries, and many times and across these years that we've been following this investigation for their efforts and work. Their help has been invaluable. Second, I would like to thank West Valley City's Police Department themselves. The work that they have done here in this case has been monumental. As the mayor mentioned, we have not been able to find any example, and the work that they have done is unprecedented in terms of following up every lead, every opportunity, every bit of information that had any kind of credible nature whatsoever in pursuing this investigation. Sometimes our efforts are rewarded, and sometimes our efforts are not rewarded until much later. In this particular case, we have not yet found Susan Powell. But that is not a reflection and should not be a reflection on the professionalism, the integrity, and the ability, the dedication of West Valley City's men and women that are in their police department. Josh Powell committed a heinous and a horrible act and crime. He alone bears responsibility for that crime and anyone who assisted him. Once again, as I've said, we will pursue any other lead that comes up as it comes up, but at this time we are announcing the closing of the active portion of this investigation. And I will now turn the time over to Deputy Chief Mike Powell.
That is Wayne Pyle. He is the city manager of West Valley, making the announcement today that they are ending the investigation, or at least the formal investigation, into the disappearance of Susan Powell.
Approximately 3.5 years ago, Susan Cox Powell was last seen at her West Valley City home. She has not been seen or heard from since. The circumstances surrounding her suspicious disappearance, or the circumstances were very suspicious from the very beginning, but were limited in information and little to no cooperation from her husband, her then husband, Josh Powell. Since the initial call on December 7th of 2009, the West Valley City Police Department has been meticulously and tirelessly investigating the circumstances surrounding her disappearance. This endeavor was not done alone, and many resources have been utilized throughout the 3.5 years of investigation. Multiple local, state, and federal law enforcement agencies, along with numerous other public safety professionals, have assisted with this investigation. The public in general has displayed a deep interest in following this investigation, and their support has been greatly appreciated. The media, many of you are here today, and many others throughout the world, have also sought answers and supported our efforts into bringing resolution to this tragic case. We thank you for your support, and at times, your assistance with this endeavor. Today, Susan is still missing. We do not know where she is or what happened to her. We have reached a point in the investigation where the tips and leads have been investigated and followed up on completely. Relevant interviews have been completed, searches have been exhausted, and no additional information is available for us to investigate at this time. This investigation will remain active so that additional information that may come forward can and will be investigated just as meticulously as all of the previous information has been. From early on in this investigation, we have stated that more information would be released at the appropriate time and at the appropriate place. That day has arrived. We are here today to release numerous documents and reports related to the investigation of the disappearance of Susan Cox Powell. We will also be releasing detailed information about the investigation. In preparation to do just that, I am confirming that early on in this investigation, multiple documents were sealed by the court, and a secrecy order was put in place to protect the integrity of the investigation. This was necessary to allow law enforcement the ability to move forward without compromise and to conduct a complete and unobstructed investigation. As of today's date, previously sealed documents have been unsealed, and the court has lifted the secrecy order. The documents released today include those generated by the West Valley City Police Department through the beginning of May 2013 and do not include documents or reports generated by outside agencies or departments. A few documents are still being reviewed at this time. Those include the recent search in Oregon and will not be available until they are completed. Obviously, any documents that are received or generated from the beginning of May 2013 will not be included in today's release until they are completed and reviewed thoroughly. From the very first search warrant written in this investigation, the West Valley City Police Department has involved the Salt Lake County District Attorney's Office. A deputy district attorney was assigned to assist with all court documents and processes and has been intimately involved from the very beginning. This is a relationship that has continued through the current date, and we are very appreciative to both District Attorney Sim Gill and the previous District Attorney, Laura Miller, for their advice, assistance, and support. We also extend the same level of appreciation and gratitude to our federal counterparts for their assistance and support throughout this entire investigation. This investigation has traveled to many different states and throughout numerous jurisdictions. Without their assistance, we would not have been able to conduct investigations outside the state of Utah. No stone has been left unturned. For the West Valley City Police Department, our top priority in this investigation has been to find Susan, followed by developing sufficient information to prosecute those involved in her disappearance. When traditional investigative techniques were unsuccessful, we turned to non-traditional investigative techniques to further the efforts. Searches related to this investigation have been conducted throughout the states of Utah, Nevada, Wyoming, Washington, Oregon, Colorado, Minnesota, Michigan, Florida, California, and Idaho. These have included searches in the desert, through the mountains, into various mine shafts, and through canyons and valleys. The searches have been conducted on foot by means of motorized vehicles, utilizing horseback, in the water, and from the air. We have utilized the assistance of various search and rescue teams, underwater recovery teams, specialized search dogs, and a myriad of technology to cover and investigate a vast amount of ground and terrain. Over 400 mines were cleared and documented. Over 800 tips and leads were followed up on and cleared. Over 800 individuals were spoken to, interviewed, or communicated with, and nearly 100 court documents were obtained during this investigation. During the initial stages of this investigation, the West Valley City Police Department named Josh Powell as a person of interest. No other names were specified, but it was frequently stated that anyone involved in Susan's disappearance would also be considered a person of interest. It is clearly spelled out in the release of documents today that many other individuals were also investigated to include family members, friends, associates, and coworkers. Josh was the last person to see Susan before she disappeared. His lack of cooperation, no expression of concern for his missing wife, no alleged crime scene, and the limited physical evidence was frustrating to say the least. However, we believed early on that he was involved in her disappearance. For this reason, we looked at this case as a homicide, kidnapping, as well as containing obstruction of justice considerations. Without a crime scene, just circumstantial evidence, and no body, successful prosecution was not likely to happen at this point. Proceeding forward with a warrant arrest required the support of the prosecuting attorney's office, and they did not feel that there was enough for a successful conviction. Continuous efforts were made to develop additional information that would support a successful prosecution throughout this investigation. This included the utilization of a court-authorized interception of a communication device, or commonly referred to as a wiretap. This required a significant amount of preparation and was ultimately authorized in August of 2011. The primary focus was to intercept phone calls involving Josh and Stephen Powell in hopes that they would disclose something that would lead us to the whereabouts of Susan. This process of intercepting communication devices was extended out to October of 2011. During this time frame, a search warrant for Stephen Powell's residence in the state of Washington was executed. Additional evidence of criminal acts was discovered as a result. Stephen Powell made it very public that he was infatuated with Susan. We focused on him for a period of time until such a determination was made that he most likely did not have any involvement in Susan's disappearance. During the investigation into Stephen Powell, other discoveries were made, and that information was handled and passed over to the Pierce County Sheriff's Office in the state of Washington. Stephen Powell's current prison sentence is a result of that investigation. During this time frame, Josh fought the courts for full custody of his two boys, Braden and Charlie. This was a significant concern, and the welfare of the boys outweighed other aspects of the investigation. Due to the sealing of numerous court documents related to this investigation, a court order from the state of Utah was required to release any information that would support concern for the boys' welfare. Once this was authorized by the court in the state of Utah and approved to be released to the court in the state of Washington, it was presented in a child custody hearing in January of 2012. As a result of that hearing, the Washington court imposed additional requirements on Josh and did not allow him to have custody of Braden and Charlie. In the days following the court hearing, unbeknownst to anyone, Josh planned and prepared to murder his two boys. No one else was responsible for this act other than Josh. He murdered his two boys with his own hands before burning their innocent bodies and cowardly killing himself. There was no prior indication whatsoever that he would ever hurt the boys. It was no secret that he had been suicidal in the past, and he was more than willing to hurt Susan, but he never showed any signs that he would hurt the boys. Another family member, Michael Powell, was also a direct focus of our investigation. His possible involvement was not known in the early stages, but developed as the investigation progressed. A dedicated effort was formed, and Michael Powell was heavily investigated as potentially having some involvement in Susan's disappearance. With Josh being dead, Michael became a primary focus of our investigation. A significant amount of communication occurred between Michael and Josh, both over the phone and through encrypted internet messages. Some of this communication was intercepted. However, a large portion was not able to be deciphered. His delayed arrival to help his brother in the early stages of the investigation was suspicious, to say the least, and presented many questions that went unanswered for a period of time. This includes the alleged breaking down of his vehicle just over the southern border of Oregon and the subsequent locating of that vehicle in a nearby junkyard. A complete and thorough investigation was conducted surrounding Michael Powell's vehicle with no concrete evidence or additional information related to Susan's disappearance. A specialized search dog indicated on his vehicle while it was at a salvage yard in Oregon, and evidence of DNA was located in the trunk of that vehicle. However, the DNA test results were inconclusive and did not fit Susan's profile. Several interviews were conducted over a period of time with Michael without any disclosure of involvement. He was very deceitful and uncooperative with his responses. He was very supportive of Josh and adamantly defended his brother. It was suspicious that Josh had named Michael as the primary beneficiary of the life insurance policy for him and the boys. During the first of this year, the West Valley Police Department started to look into a tip regarding property that members of the Powell family had lived on outside of Salem, Oregon. That initial tip information was provided by Chuck Cox. It was alleged that Michael may have met up with Josh at some point in the first days of Susan's disappearance, possibly transporting her body and disposing of it on this property. In February of this year, just after the investigation into the Oregon property had started, Michael Powell committed suicide. This had a significant impact on the investigation and essentially left us with no other persons of an interest to investigate further. For a significant amount of time, the focus of the investigation was to develop prosecutable information to be used against Josh and Michael. This was paramount to a successful trial. There were no eyewitnesses to the event. A body has not yet been discovered, and it is apparent that neither Josh nor Michael spoke with anybody about the course of events that transpired during the week of December 6th, 2009. With both Josh and Michael committing suicide, many of the details and their involvement have left this world with them. The focus now has been and will continue to be finding Susan and to bring final closure to the Cox family. The recent search outside of Salem, Oregon was conducted to accomplish just that, in an effort to find Susan. All related information was compiled and the search of the property was approved. That search was conducted last week with the assistance of local and federal law enforcement and with the assistance of specialized search dogs. Approximately 150 acres were searched over a period of 2 days. Several areas were searched numerous times in an effort to be complete and to be thorough in all of our efforts. Unfortunately, no significant information, evidence, or leads were obtained related to Susan's disappearance during the search. Interviews were conducted with Powell family members that had previously rented this property, and it was determined that they had no direct involvement in Susan's disappearance or information on her whereabouts. The West Valley City Police Department remains committed to investigate any and all information relevant to the disappearance of Susan Cox Powell. We have left no stone unturned over the last 3.5 years of this investigation. The investigators involved in this case have done a phenomenal job of looking into all possible means to further this investigation. It is difficult to understand what the Cox family has gone through during this time. Our hearts go out to them, and we thank them for their support. We also again express our appreciation to the many local, state, and federal law enforcement agencies that have assisted us in this investigation. We continue to encourage anyone that might have information regarding the whereabouts of Susan to contact us so that appropriate follow-up can be conducted. I'd also like to extend that note of appreciation to the media and to the public as a whole for all of your support and for the continued efforts on your part to help us in this investigation. At this point, I would like to open up the forum to some questions in which I will try and answer the questions to the best of my ability. I will say, as this continues,
you are listening to a news conference out of West Valley City on KSL News Radio about the search for Susan Powell. And police there saying that after 3.5 years, they have ended that search and exhausted leads, and they're now taking questions.
At this point,
at this point, are you prepared to say what you believe did happen to Susan Powell, and are you saying Josh Powell killed his wife?
What we are saying at this point is that we believe that Josh Powell was involved in the disappearance of Susan.
Did he kill his wife then?
The specifics are difficult to say at this point, Ben, and we are confident that Josh had was definitely involved in her disappearance. The circumstances surrounding that are still unknown at this time.
So do you believe you'll likely never know then what exactly happened in that house that night?
We would like to find answers to all the questions that we have, including, and first and foremost, where Susan is so that we can bring final closure to this investigation.
How confident are you that Michael Powell was involved in her disappearance?
We believe firmly that Michael Powell was involved in her disappearance. We don't believe that he was directly involved, but that he had involvement at some point with her disappearance. And
with regards to the DNA in the trunk, said the tests were inconclusive but didn't match Susan's profile. Can you clarify that? So was Susan Powell ruled out as the source of the DNA in the trunk?
There was DNA evidence located inside the trunk of Michael Powell's vehicle, in the vehicle that was located outside of, or in the salvage yard out in Oregon. That DNA profile did not match that of Susan Powell.
And you said you met with the district attorney. Did you actually
I appreciate you asking that question, Pat. And as I addressed early on in my comments, from the onset of this investigation, the district attorney's office was involved, the court documents, obviously, and had heavily and direct involvement from the district attorney's office. And a deputy district attorney was assigned to assist us throughout the entirety of this case. The process alone of having a deputy district attorney assigned to this investigation, I think, answers that question. They had intimate involvement throughout the entirety of this investigation.
So can you say how close you think you were at any point to filing?
Our purpose throughout this entirety of this investigation, obviously, was to find Susan. And secondary, in regards to that, our secondary focus was to be able to obtain enough information to follow through with the successful prosecution of any and all of those involved in her disappearance.
So, Mike, did you have charges filed? Did you guys want charges filed based on this questioning there? Did you feel like you had a case here? Did you say you want this thing filed?
The investigation from the very beginning was not a matter of just what the West Valley City Police Department thought or believed. We had the involvement of the District Attorney's Office for obvious reasons. The many court documents that were utilized and authored throughout the entirety of this investigation were a result of having the involvement from the District Attorney's Office from the very beginning. The likelihood of a successful prosecution was very limited based on the fact that there was no identified crime scene, no body, no circumstantial evidence, and based on that alone, the likelihood of a successful prosecution was not high.
You guys were willing to accept that?
We've dedicated 3.5 years to obtaining any and all information that we could possibly come up with using many techniques and dedicating countless hours and manpower to this investigation. As I've stated before, we left no stone unturned. We've dedicated everything to putting forth every effort to putting together as much information to follow through with that. And at this point, we do not have all of that.
So is this the perfect crime?
That's a difficult question to answer on many levels. I think the best answer for me to say in regards to that is this is a horrific crime.
If Josh and Michael Bauer were so uncooperative from the very beginning, could you not have given them some sort of obstruction of justice charges or anything at all that you could have arrested either one of them on?
You know, as I've answered several times in this forum already, it's a difficult question to answer with exact specifics. What were we able to do? What were we not able to do? The fact that we brought the district attorney's office on from the very beginning of this investigation allowed us to utilize the district attorney's office and for them to be involved from the onset. Decisions were not made just on our part alone. Decisions were made with the assistance of the district attorney's office. They provided assistance, support, and advice throughout the entirety of this investigation.
Can you talk about the DNA evidence? What type of DNA are we talking about here? Hair, fingerprints, blood? Can you elaborate on that?
You know, I'm actually going to turn to Deputy Chief Phil Quinlan and see if he might be able to answer that a little bit more specifically.
With regard to the DNA evidence, the process that we used was non-specific in the sense that it's hair or fingernails. We used a process that we were able to basically soak the trunk with a sterile solution, and it would draw up any sort of DNA material that would be in the trunk. And the DNA was a partial profile. So it wasn't an entire strain of DNA that was in the trunk and belongs to somebody. We only know that it's DNA and that there was only a few markers on that DNA. And the few markers that we did have, we did compare to Susan's DNA, and it was not a match.
You're listening to a news conference in West Valley City. West Valley City Police announcing their formal investigation into the disappearance of Susan Powell has now come to an end.
Could it simply be that somebody's hair or blood or saliva or something that some object that may have deposited DNA in the trunk was there? So it's really inconclusive. It's hard to say.
So there wasn't a massive pool of blood, essentially, is what you're saying?
No. Trunk. No. This was trace. Trace.
Would it have to have been blood, saliva, or hair? Is that what you're saying?
Well, or skin. I mean, any part of the human body that contains a DNA profile it could have been in that solution.
When you say it wasn't a match, you also said it was inconclusive. So does that mean that there just wasn't enough to get a match?
The only way that we can verify with the high certainty that DNA evidence allows us to is that we need a full profile.
Could this DNA have been in there from somebody simply loading stuff?
Sure.
And scrape their arm? I mean, it could be that something.
Yes.
That
Yeah, that's a very strong possibility, correct.
Do we know that this was human DNA, or could it have belonged to an animal?
It's human.
Am I, with the Powell brothers, that Stephen Powell's still alive, do you think he knows anything that's found out here that we're pursuing?
In regards to Stephen Powell, we have ruled out his direct involvement, but we do believe that he, at some point, may have overheard or had some type of knowledge of something that did transpire that would have been related to her disappearance.
Have you given up hope that he's going to be able to be a source to be able to help finish the investigation?
It's difficult to say. He's made it very clear that he is completely and entirely uncooperative and wants nothing to do with law enforcement.
Can you talk more at this point, can you pursue any kind of charge against Stephen Powell? And if you think he overheard something, murder is an accessory. I know Washington has a law on that. Have you consulted with Washington prosecutors? Are you looking at any additional charges against Stephen Powell?
At this point, we're not ruling out any possibilities or any options. Obviously, as any additional information does come forward, we will continue to investigate that, and we will dedicate just as much time and effort into those coming in as we have to those that we have already investigated.
Did you at any point ask the grand jury to consider evidence against Josh Powell when he was alive?
We have utilized the resources of our federal counterparts in many different capacities, and they have been very supportive, and they have been very helpful throughout the entirety of this investigation. both at the state, the local level, as well as the federal level.
Can you talk more about these cryptic messages between Josh and Michael? You said they were all watching, you couldn't interpret, I guess?
That is correct. Specifically, it's some of the communications that was intercepted was not able to be deciphered. And as a result of that, we were unable to make any determination. If you'll give me one more minute on that, Pat, I'm going to actually turn that over to Deputy Chief Phil Quinlan.
One of the things that you may remember in the beginning of this case, I think when some search warrants were released, is that one of the challenges we had with Josh Powell's computers that we seized from his home is that they were encrypted with a very sophisticated encryption program. And what we came to learn over the course of the investigation is that Michael Powell and his brother Joshua Powell used encryption in various forms to communicate electronically. And that encryption was so sophisticated that we weren't able to decipher it with current technology. And so those communications that were encrypted, we have, to this day, have not been able to decipher or nor the content.
Was it like a series of numbers or letters, or was it just like a...
Well,
I'm
certainly not the computer expert probably to answer that question, but what I do know of the case is that they were using commercially available encryption that was used to somehow cloak or shroud their communications so that they were not discoverable by law enforcement and law enforcement technology.
In the sense of those types of circumstances, would the manufacturer of the encryption software or program or whatever be able to assist in breaking the code?
We did contact one manufacturer, and unfortunately they weren't able to help us once they said that because of the password protection technology, it would be largely dependent upon current technology that law enforcement has to decrypt that information.
Can you talk a little bit about the documents that you'll be releasing to the public? What exactly do those documents entail, and why make it public?
As we've mentioned early on, when the appropriate time and place, or the appropriate time arrived, we would release documents pertinent to this investigation. And the documents that we will be releasing today contain police reports and other documents specifically related to our investigation and how that and the contents of that investigation over the course of 3.5 years.
What do you want the public to get out of that by releasing the documents? Are you worried that there may be scrutiny over how the investigation was handled?
I think definitely the best way for me to answer that is you have asked for those documents for quite some time. And you have asked on numerous occasions. I think everyone in this room has probably submitted at least one point or another request for those documents. And it is time. It is time that we release those documents and make those available.
So when you say lack of a crime statement, going back to the very beginning, the evidence was talked about, like a stain on the couch and fans blowing on it. Can you talk about that now? Was that Susan's blood? Was that evidence used in this case? What was found in his house?
There were evidence of blood inside the Powell residence, and those droplets of blood did come back to Susan. However, it's important to realize and understand that it's not uncommon for that to be an occurrence inside a residence. Much of the residence that each and every one of us live in probably have something similar at some point that could be located and could be identified in that same fashion. I'm sorry. Let's. Minimal in size, and if I'm not mistaken, they were located in the front room by the entry.
Was that also the same area where the fans were blowing?
The fans were in the front room, and they were directed towards the couch.
With blood in the area towards the couch, with the fans.
The front room, obviously a large scale, large size room, couches in it, and the entryway in reference is actually the entranceway to the front door.
Is there evidence yes. trying to hide evidence up on the couch?
So maybe I should ask you to repeat your question again. So where was the blood located? Is that the question? In reference to the fans were pointed in the direction of the couch. They were not pointed in the direction of the entryway. They were directed at the couch. The blood droplets were located on the floor at the entryway.
What about the reports that in the beginning
Does that answer your question? Okay. Chris?
The reports that we heard that there was carpet cut out from portions of the home, is that the case? Was that accurate?
There was evidence that was, or potential evidence that was removed from the house. Obviously, to further help us in the investigation, there was no other significant findings in relationship to that.
I guess, looking back over all the evidence now, that the rental car would be 800 miles, did you ever make a determination of that, where he went, or the middle of the night trip to camping in Tooele, do you believe that ever happened?
Let me start with the with the first question in reference to the rental car. Josh did obtain a rental vehicle, and there was approximately 800 miles, a little over 800 miles placed on that rental vehicle. Where he went with those 800 miles is still unknown to us at this time. We do know that that vehicle did travel in a northern direction, and we know that because we were able to track at least 150 miles related to that, and that was in the area of northern Utah.
Besides the mileage that was put on that rental car,
Not that we're aware of, no.
And Mike, what came of the mines? I mean, what were you guys looking for? What did you find?
As part of our search efforts, we did conduct many, many searches into well over 400 mines. Our efforts in regards to that were we were looking for Susan. And we did not find her.
What led you to those mines? What evidence specifically?
A lot of the evidence that led us, or the indications that led us to search those mines, were comments that were made early on, and obviously the statements made by Josh Powell early on in the investigation. The area that he went camping towards and some of the activities that they had been involved in, some of the statements made specifically led us to believe that that was a possibility and a very high likelihood. Every bit of information that we received, whether it was a tip, a lead, or just general information, we looked at very closely and meticulously went through. As we were able to take that information and develop further information, that's what led us to conduct these searches, whether it was in the mines, whether it was in the mountains, whether it was in other parts of the desert, or whether it was in a potential body of water. We looked at all those aspects and conducted all of the searches in relationship to information that we developed as a result of the investigation. There was information that led us out to the area outside of Topaz Mountain, and as you are all very well aware, we conducted a very thorough search of the area in and around Topaz Mountain.
Mike, did you ever find anything at Topaz Mountain? The dogs hit on things multiple times, but was there anything that ever pertained to Susan's disappearance?
We have utilized the specialized search dogs in many capacities. In reference to Topaz Mountain, the search dogs did indicate in several different areas of potential human remains. What we were able to discover of that in regards to that and those findings by the search dogs is that there was nothing relative to our investigation.
Normally you don't invite the media to come out to a search until you know something's actually there. You seem pretty certain that something was going to be at the Topaz Mountain search site, which is why you invited us out there kind of in the first place. At least that's how it feels. I mean, how confident were you that there was going to be something big there in those mountains?
You know, any aspect of this investigation, whether it was a search or any other follow-up that was conducted, we were confident in the information that we had, that it would potentially develop additional information to lead us further in the investigation and to have additional information developed to help us locate and find Susan. Topaz Mountain was very important, and quite honestly, the media presence there and at other locations was in part directly related to your inquiries and request to be a part of the searches.
How many times did you get an opportunity to interview Josh? And did he ever say anything aside from what she was wearing, what Susan was wearing? What did he give you, if anything, in an interview? And how many times did you talk to him?
The specific number of times that interviews were conducted or attempted to be conducted with Josh Powell, I actually don't know the exact answer to that. We did attempt numerous times to investigate him while he was still living here in the state of Utah. He was very deceitful and provided little to no information that was beneficial at all.
So he did actually come down to the police station with his attorney, right? And was
was questioned, I guess, on some level and didn't?
He was interviewed at one point here at the police department early on in the investigation. That is correct.
Do you remember how long it was and did he say anything? Obviously he did, right? What did he say?
I do not have the information as to exactly how long the interview was or the specifics of that interview at this time.
You didn't reveal anything, obviously.
Nothing that was pertinent to the investigation at that time.
Michael, the junkyard is in Oregon, are you talking about?
That's correct.
How far is the junkyard from the search area last week?
From the search area in just outside of Salem, Oregon? The junkyard was located in Pendleton, Oregon, and I believe that is approximately 200 miles.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
This car that you find in the junkyard, is a Ford Taurus?
That is correct.
And it belonged to Michael?
Yes, it did.
And can you tell us a little bit more, maybe I'm the only one who knows it. When was the car discovered there, and when had it been abandoned there, and what did Michael say about leaving the car there?
We believe that the vehicle was abandoned just outside of Pendleton early on in the investigation. We did not know about that, and we were not made aware of that until further on in the investigation. Once it was discovered that that was an event that had occurred, we obviously followed up on that and investigated it to its fullest. We were able to discover where the vehicle was taken to, obviously to the junkyard. We were able to locate that vehicle. Subsequently, we're able to interview and speak with individuals that were involved with that particular vehicle itself, and we were able to utilize the specialized search dogs to further our investigation at that point. And obviously, they indicated on the vehicle, and we've answered several questions in regards to what was discovered at that point.
Yeah, I understand that much, but I'm wondering what led you to the vehicle. What did Michael Powell say about leaving the vehicle in the junkyard?
Michael Powell was very deceitful in any and all of the interviews that we had and that we conducted with him. The information we were able to develop, in part, was information that we located and that we were able to come up with by virtue of the investigation itself. And as we came across that information, we looked into it further, and that's what led us to focusing more in depth on Michael Powell and his possible and potential involvement.
That's interesting. At this point, early on in the investigation, when you believe that the car had been abandoned in Oregon, where was Michael Powell living at that point?
I believe he was living at the point that we located the vehicle. Is that correct?
At the point that he abandoned the vehicle, where was Michael Powell living?
The vehicle, according to the records that we obtained, was salvaged in December of 2009. I don't remember the specific date, but it was late in December. We discovered the vehicle had been salvaged in August of 2011. At the time that the vehicle was salvaged by Michael Powell, he was still residing with, I believe, his father in Washington. At the time that we learned of the vehicle, that had been salvaged, sometime later. By that time, Michael Powell had moved and relocated to Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Okay. And can I just find a question? Was this vehicle involved in some kind of 1,000-mile trip or travel that you had figured in the investigation?
We don't know. We don't know. We do have information that shortly after Susan was reported missing, that Michael Powell traveled down here and was in contact with Joshua Powell for a period of time shortly after her disappearance. We know that he, at some point shortly thereafter, returned to the state of Washington. But where he went or traveled is unbeknownst to us.
You are listening to a news conference on KSL News Radio out of West Valley City. West Valley Police calling an end to the search for Susan Cox Powell, and now they are detailing that investigation.
For me to be able to prosecute them for the investigation?
All the searches that were conducted throughout the entirety of this investigation were legitimate searches. They had valid information to follow up on, and that specific information warranted an actual search at the many locations that we did search throughout the 3.5-year investigation.
Can I get a some clarification on the timeline with the car, Michael Stoll's car that was in the salvage yard. That was late December 2009, but you didn't find out about it until when?
Just to reiterate, according to the records we obtained, Michael Powell salvaged that car in Pendleton, Oregon in late December 2009. At that time, our police department was not aware that he had salvaged that car. But during the course of our investigation, we discovered some records that revealed to us in August of 2011 that the car had been salvaged. And as soon as we learned about that vehicle being salvaged in late 2009, we sent investigators to Pendleton, Oregon to further investigate.
So 2 years?
About a year and a half, roughly, 18 months, yeah.
Why would Josh Powell want to kill his wife? What is your best guess or information on motive? And also, Mr. Pyle, I heard you say at the start, Josh Powell committed a heinous crime. Do you at least believe that Josh Powell killed and put his wife's body somewhere?
You know, Nate, in response to the first portion of that question, and I'm going to ask you to go ahead and repeat that, and then you have a question specific for City Manager.
Why do you think Josh Powell would want to kill his wife?
That's a very good question, Nate, and I quite honestly don't have any idea how to answer that because I don't know. All that we know is that he had in-depth and intimate involvement in her disappearance. For what those reasons were, I think that's the guess of anyone.
Didn't you recover a last will and testament that said that anything were to happen to me that she feared? And then there was friend accounts that said he was upset if she would leave him?
That is correct. We did obtain that information. But to speculate as to what his thought process was at the time and what what his motives were at the time, we probably won't ever have that information at this point.
So the question, do police ever give Josh or Michael or Stephen Powell lie detector tests, anything to that effect?
You know, many attempts were made in furthering our efforts, but keep in mind that Josh Powell was very uncooperative from the very beginning, and to impose a perceived lie detector test would require cooperation under those circumstances. He was uncooperative from the onset of the investigation.
Could you have gotten a court order to impose the lie detector test on any one of the three?
No, we couldn't do that. Polygraphs are inadmissible in a criminal trial, so no, that wouldn't have been a possibility for us.
When did you start to think that Michael Powell might have had more involvement or might have knowledge? And how does that relate on a timeline to his suicide in Minneapolis?
We believe that we discovered that Michael Powell had potential involvement early on throughout the investigation. There was some suspicion from the initial onset, but that was not able to be developed until further on in the investigation. And a lot of that was geared towards the aspect of the vehicle when that information was discovered. And we were able to focus more directly on him and his potential involvement. And as we moved further on in that investigation, we were able to develop additional information that led us to many of the steps that we took, including the search that was conducted in Oregon just recently.
Was it clear to him, at least, that there was some heat on him prior to his suit? I'm not trying to have you connect the two, but did he know that he was being more scrutinized around 2011?
We had interviewed him on numerous occasions. How that influenced him, I have no idea.
Right, yeah, but that's when it started to get kind of hot for him, right? 2011 or so, or was he sort of, did you interview him more and more?
The first initial interview with Michael Powell was?
Shortly after we discovered the vehicle in Pendleton, Oregon, our agency sent detectives to Minneapolis, and we were able to conduct an interview with Michael Powell. And that I would characterize that interview as the point where Michael Powell knew that he was now the subject of our investigation.
When did he commit suicide?
It was in February of this year.
Mike, you mentioned several times that Josh Powell, that you believe, City Manager Wayne Powell mentioned, committed a heinous act.
Susan's disappearance, but you don't have a motive, you don't know a motive. What makes you say that he was involved in Susan's disappearance?
Circumstantial evidence that surrounds this entire investigation and the fact that he was completely and entirely uncooperative, it leads me to be able to make that comment. And we do believe that he had intimate involvement in her disappearance. Obviously, it's a difficult task. We don't have a body. We don't have a crime scene. There's bits and pieces that are not, that we do not currently have. If we had that information, obviously we would probably be telling a different story at this point.
I mean, like a lot of people in this room have felt like we all had a hunch, right? Just based on the observation of how he reacted. But did you have something more that led you to say, okay, we think he was intimately involved?
Yeah. Arrests and prosecutions are never based on a hunch. They're based on factual information. And those are the standards that we have to go off of.
Did you have more of those facts?
The purpose of our investigation, first and foremost, was to find Susan, and the secondary purpose of our investigation was to develop additional information that we would be able to utilize in a successful prosecution. And as we went through that process, that's exactly what we were focused on. I will ask two additional questions, and if it's okay with City Manager, I'll refrain from answering any questions that will be directed at him. And if you would like,
I'll answer the one question.
Okay, so let's go ahead and go to that point right now. Nate, if you had the question for City Manager, and then I'll follow up with two additional questions.
To clarify your earlier statement, Mr. Miles, have you at least drawn a conclusion that Josh Powell was responsible for his wife's disappearance and probably murder?
The heinous act that I was referring to is the homicide of his children. So no, that's not what I was referring to. And it doesn't really matter what I believe happened in terms of Josh Powell. It's not really the point here at this juncture in the investigation. But I will say this, that you or I or Brian, for example, pointed out the fact that many of us sit around in this conference room and have opinions based on reports, information, rumor, you know, whatever. I think it speaks highly of the police department's investigation and their objectivity and their absolute professionalism, once again, in the sense that they know that they do not have the luxury of making that kind of assumption, and so therefore their investigations, their efforts are always and foremost centered around absolutely the searching for the fact.
Mayor, do you believe any errors were made in the course of the investigation? Of course, there's going to be a lot of looking back on this. There's obviously whether you could have gone to prosecutors or not. Perspective, were there mistakes made at the beginning?
The documents you'll receive today, what do they number?
Significant.
Tens of thousands of pages. And as you go through those, it'll be easy to Monday morning quarterback, perhaps. But I think at the end of the day, you'll see a police force that was completely dedicated from the beginning, completely professional from the beginning, and did everything they could do to find Susan and bring her home.
And just to clarify, the police department had gone to the district attorney's office several times to discuss whether or not this case could be prosecuted. Is that correct?
And I don't know how more clear I can be in regards to that. From the onset of the investigation, a deputy district attorney was assigned to the West Valley City Police Department to further this investigation.
So was it under Miller that stated this case could not be prosecuted?
From the onset of the investigation, Laura Miller, for that first initial part of this investigation, Laura Miller was the district attorney. Obviously, there was a change in the office of the district attorney's office at that time, and Sim Gill did come forward. The involvement of the district attorney's office did not change as a result of that. We continued to have the involvement, the direct involvement, the intimate involvement from a deputy district attorney throughout the entirety of this investigation. A deputy district attorney was assigned to this particular investigation. Absolutely, and I believe you will see that in the documents, and many of the documents that were previously released and in the documents that have yet to be released. I'm going to go ahead and take one more question, and then I will have a brief set of instructions on how you might be able to obtain the release of these documents.
So when officers go in and they talk to the deputy district attorney and they say, look, we've got a case, let's do this, I mean, was there ever anything like that that your officers ever say, let's just go ahead and arrest him and charge him? Can you do that? Did you do it?
In response to that, I'm going to go ahead and turn the mic back over to Deputy Chief Phil Quinlan to answer that.
Will you repeat the question, please?
When you when you go and you meet with the deputy district attorney and you say, look, we've got a strong case, let's move forward with arrest and prosecution. All right, can you do that? Is that something that your officers would they felt that way, and did you in this case?
What I can say about the district attorney's involvement is that they've been with us, they've been lockstep with us through this entire case. We are bound by, obviously, the laws of the state of Utah and the Constitution, and we have certain evidentiary standards that we simply have to meet, and we could not meet those in this particular case. What I can tell you is that with the district attorney, we had numerous conversations with the prosecutor assigned, and it would just never materialize to the point where we felt like we had sufficient evidence to bring a criminal charge of murder against Josh Powell.
So both parties felt like we just don't have enough?
Yes.
Could you press and say, look, let's move forward, we feel strongly?
No, because ultimately it's the district attorney's office that makes the ultimate charging decision. The police department does not charge people with crimes. That ultimately falls to the prosecuting authority. So our job is to be independent finders of fact, do the best job that we can do to put the best investigation together that we can and present that to the prosecutors so that then they then can make a charging decision based on our investigation. They were, because this is a release of the documents that West Valley City Police Department owns and has maintained regarding the investigation. So this is about the release of our documents to the public regarding this investigation.
Did anyone at the police department at any time feel like it could have been prosecuted, even though that would have boarded on to a
You know, I think it just comes back to the fact that we're bound by legal standards, and it's our job, in fact, our oath to uphold those standards, and in order to bring a successful prosecution, there has to be certain levels of evidence and certain levels of legal standards that we just simply have to meet. This is a circumstantial case, yes. There's circumstantial evidence, but circumstantial evidence can create its own difficulties in terms of bringing a prosecution.
Did you ever, related back to encryption really quick, when you asked that one company to help you, decode the computers of both the Powell brothers, did you go to the FBI? Any other police agency or force that might have that expertise as well?
Before I provide an answer to that, this will be the last question, and then I'll have a set of instructions that I want to provide to each and every one of you so that you can follow through with how you can obtain the release of our documents pertinent to this investigation. We have utilized the assistance of our federal counterparts throughout many aspects of this investigation. They've been very helpful, and they've been very supportive throughout the entirety, and many things would not have been possible without their assistance. Sorry, I'm not sure whose phone that was.
Specifically that, too, like any encryption. You said many angles, many aspects. That one, too.
We have utilized every possible means that we could come up with or that we could think of, both within our own means and by the means of our federal law enforcement counterparts in every aspect of this investigation to further develop additional information that would lead us to the whereabouts of Susan.
And you've been listening to a news conference in West Valley City. That was Deputy Chief Mike Powell ending the news conference at 3 o'clock this afternoon. The city manager and the police announced that they are ending their formal investigation into the disappearance of Susan Powell. They have run out of leads, basically, after years of investigating this case and have not found anything that would lead them to say, this is what happened to Susan Powell and this is who is responsible, although they pointed very clearly to the fact that Josh Powell was the person of interest and also implicated his brother Mike Powell as possibly being involved in Susan's disappearance.
Right. You can imagine 3.5 years of a search for Susan Powell. They have stacks of information that they are releasing to the media since they are ending the search for her. But they're also saying that they're going to keep the investigation open in case any new leads come about, and they will certainly look at those leads as well. Let's take a look at your traffic and weather together. And here's Mark Christiansen.
Well, it looks like I-15 is moving well now through Utah County. Had an accident.